This is tape recording number 5110C01, October Series Lecture 0C, a tape recorded lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard on the 1st of October 1951. The title of this lecture is Self-Determinism, Effort Processing. It is 1 hour and 52 minutes and 42 seconds long and is recorded on both sides of this tape. Copyright C, 1951-1973 by L. Ron Hubbard, all world performance rights reserved. This recording has been re-recorded by the Flag Audio Unit of the Flagship Apollo of the Sea Organization. In this lecture, Ron discusses self-determinism and effort processing and the progress of the science. And now, here is L. Ron Hubbard.
October 1st, 1951.
Eighth age, self-determinism.
One of the most interesting things that we have run into sometime is the fact that probably all of us, with the knowledge which has been accumulated here not very long ago, suddenly summed up the push buttons which we now have to hand, probably all of us could put on black hoods, cowls, you know, look grim and mysterious about the whole thing, button up all communication lines about Dianetics, that is to say, not let out any axioms or anything like that, and just start practicing what apparently is black magic. Bring people in off the streets, and they just walk down the hall, and they stop in office one, and it's got a little sign on it that says, remove glasses, glasses removed here, and you just run them around. You don't have any couches, anything cluttering the place up like this. And you just walk them around the hall. And at each place, there's another auditor sitting there. And he just asks standard questions. And they walk around all the way and then out onto the street again. Of course, they stop at the desk before they go out and write out a check for the equivalent amount of medical treatment, which would come to $8,687,962.05. There is some slight possibility that we may be at that stage. Now, I don't want to over-evaluate anything, however. So the latter part of this evening's talk will be devoted to making releases out of all of you. That's the last 15 minutes of tonight's lecture in the second period. You know, sort of feel like a man that has been sitting around and he thought that pretty sure all the way along the line there was a button someplace that if you pushed the button, something horrendous would happen. And the trouble was, there were an enormous number of buttons that one could push. And finally got rather tired of just pushing single buttons and some time ago because we didn't hit the right button and started playing chords. Well, this tune is played with one finger. And we extrapolated our way out to what must be the button. And punched it without very much ceremony. And Hiroshima, Nagasaki, the first atom bomb explosion down in New Mexico, and Bikini, cap pistol. Well, it's interesting to me that the button was there so ready to hand. It's also interesting to me that the button was in use once, but was neglected. It is very fortuitous that we had to make the circuit that we made in Dianetics. Very, very fortuitous. It has been nip and tuck now for 18 or 20 months, trying to codify what I was doing for me so that it could be communicated with the proper symbols to somebody else so that they could do it. Well, at first, I didn't know that I didn't know what I was doing. Interesting situation. There stands the fellow with tar all over him, and he doesn't know that he's dirty. My whole perimeter was completely snarled up with a lot of odds and ends. It's like a witch doctor makes up a prescription. He takes half an ounce of powdered bat wings, a quarter of a gill of frog's breath, some sharply powdered XX fine tiger claws, four sunbeams from the sunrise, and two leaves of digitalis, and an incantation to the great god Woof, and then feeds them to the patient and finds out invariably the patient gets well from heart trouble. So then everybody sits around and says, was it the incantation? Well, obviously, says the fellow who's religiously inclined. Was it the two sunbeams taken from a sunrise? Obviously, say the very aesthetic. Of course, the tiger's claws and so forth, that's obviously not therapeutic, so people more or less discard that, except people who are fond of tiger's claws, and they hold on that it was that one. And as far as the frog's breath and so forth is concerned, people can say, well, it's probably needed as filler. Everybody comes around and they say, well, now this dirty old leaf stuff, that's to give it a nice green color so the patient will take it. And they could go on arguing for a long time unless they set out on a program of separation and identification of exactly what they were doing. Now, if they could do this, they would find out that it was not even the whole leaf. It was just the drug digitalis. And that you can get digitalis by the pound, and it saves an awful lot of lung and throat power. You don't have to make the incantations anymore. And furthermore, it saves getting up so early in the morning, like those sunbeams. And as a matter of fact, the aesthetic, however, are liable to say at this moment, ah, well, those sunbeams that made the world so beautiful. We're about in that situation. As had been remarked for some time, there were obviously personal factors involved in my processing of preclears. It's not only personal factors, it had to do with deep-seated personal belief. That the belief happens to be right is fortuitous. That's about all. It just happens to be coincidental. Nothing much else germane to the problem. Probably I would have arrived at it anyway by extrapolation. But it wasn't until I suddenly realized how I used to talk to naval crews that I realized that I talked to preclears the same way when I was auditing them. And, you know, a football coach starts talking to the team during the half. You know, get in there and pitch for dear old down and out you, and so forth. Well, it was about that tone of voice, only it was mostly on this subject. Well, it's up to you whether you pay any attention to these engrams or not. I'm not telling you they're aberrative or unaberrative or otherwise. Come on, well, you can either find the nerve to kick that thing out and desensitize, or you can't. I'll just sit here and wait for it. That's up to you. You can make up your mind concerning the thing. You can stay aberrate if you want to. It's all right with me. Your life, go ahead and live it. And if you want to live it with a broken leg and arthritis, that's all right with me. And I used to talk to him this way. And I'd get a guy who was slopping around on the track, and he was an occluded case and all of this sort of thing. And I'd just say, well, he'd say, well, I just don't see anything. And I'd say, well, do you want to? He'd think this over for a minute. Well, I don't see anything wrong with seeing something. You say, all right, now let's take a look at something on the track. Well, there was his Vizio. I never considered this was peculiar until I saw a medical doctor, one of the first auditors. I put auditor, unquote, quote, italics, asterisk, footnote. Saw him processing somebody, and he had this preclear on the couch, and he says, all right, now go back to birth. And the preclear goes back to birth, and he starts to say something or other. All right, now, where's your tonsillectomy? Is this connected to birth? You know it's connected to birth. And the fellow would say, oh, blub, 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 and and he'd say, all right, now let's get the other throat infections that you've had now. And I'd say, come on up to present time. All right, now we're prepared to locate an engram. And I said, don't do this. This is not right. There are two things that are not right. One, you keep running him in various places on the track where he shouldn't be. And the other one is you keep telling him what to think about it. You keep beating at him and so forth, and it makes them nervous or something when you do this. That's not the correct explanation. It undermines self-determinism, is the right one. But it makes them nervous, and they don't get well fast when you do them this way. So he'd say, well, all right, I'll reform and so forth. And you go into his auditing room the next day, and he'd say, all right, go back to birth. Don't do that to preclears, because how else are you going to get them re-stimulated enough to find an engram in them? That was 1949. In September of 1951, I had a report on this man's auditing, and he was auditing the same way. He's got vast complaints about Dianetics not having progressed any. And he lists, this is really wonderful, he lists all the improvements it should make, and all of this sort of thing. And the improvements were listed in 10 lecture notes. It was October of 1950. The most advanced improvement he delineates is mentioned in 10 lecture notes as being old hat now. I mean, here's this tremendous chasm. Well, a lot of people around have gotten stuck on the time track about Dianetics. That's almost fatal. I know people who are stuck in the time track in 1949. People are stuck in the time track in June of 1950, as far as the technique is concerned. And they'll follow this through vigorously, and they'll go through all the proper motions. Well, another preclear sitting there, lying there on the couch, the auditor's sitting there, and the auditor has a pencil. And the preclear says, well, that's something my mother always used to say. You won't never be nothing nohow, the auditor. Preclear says, my father used to beat me and tell me that I was no good. Hour after hour. Guy lying on the couch self-auditing. I would say, that's not the way to do it. You put a little beef into it. You get in there and pitch. You show the guy you're interested. What I should have said is, you better give this guy back all the self-determinism he's got, and if you give it back to him, then he'll have it. If I'd been saying that, that would have been about dead center on the truth of the matter. But so the next time that you'd look in on this particular auditor, why, you'd find out that they had made an improvement. Their technique had become more aggressive. They would say, yes, between sentences. Yes. Well, and then people started to find odds and ends, scraps of this and that, more phenomena than they knew what to do with, and it was very interesting that they followed it along. You'll find one fellow is doing nothing but running phrases out of preclears and letting them boil off. And you find this, and you find that. And you find a lot of interesting things, terrifically interesting things. All of them mostly odd and peculiar. But see myself at the foundation auditing teams, when I was still instructing auditing teams, it was not just walking along corridors and walking into rooms. The position was not one of walking. It was usually this way. It was my fault. My fault. I heap all the coals of fire on my head. I didn't know which was the push button. Now, it is terrifically fortuitous that it happened this way. The first book is a book about how L. Ron Hubbard thinks he audits. All the phenomena it mentions, they're all there. They're all locatable. Communication which is the most important, however, is not there. Wasn't known. But it was still present in the auditing. Now, that makes a very dizzy sort of a picture. You say, look, now, guy sits down, you start throwing your weight around with his pre-clear, zing, zing, zing. All of a sudden, the pre-clear says, yes, I think this is basic. That's what you're trying to find out. You say, all right, what's your feeling about it? And what do you think about it? He says, mother says so and so. Yeah, well, what do you think about this? And, well, it's just pain coming down here. What do you think about it now? All right, now how do you feel about that area? How can you still find some of it and so on? No, something's happened to it. All right, let's get all the similar experiences of this character now. What do you think about those? Where are they? You get down to the bottom of the chain, get a line charge started. All of a sudden, zing, 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 and the guy starts knocking things out and he's in present time. Case running like wildfire. This wham. Well, evidently it takes two things to make a case run like wildfire in that fashion when you don't know what you're doing completely. And that's to put lots of belief in the pre-clear to the degree that he can put a lot of belief in himself, validate the devil out of the pre-clear, be a powerhouse of ARC yourself, and the guy practically explodes on efficient principle. The next thing you know, you can't find any engrams in the fellow, and you say, all right, next. And then auditor number one comes along, and you say, now look, it's awful easy. There's a time track, and there's this phenomenon, there's that phenomenon. All you do is say, da-da-da, and da-da-da, and he's pretty clear like that, and then he's through with the engram, and you keep this up for all 50 hours, something like that, and this guy feels like $1 million. So then you read in a quote, book, unquote, asterisk, footnote, that somebody has been audited from 1,500 to 2,000 hours. Of course, it happens to be impossible for anybody to have been audited that many hours from the moment that this particular person stepped into Dianetics until the present, whereas this book was written in June. The impossibility of numbers of hours put in there. Nevertheless, there have been people in this man's vicinity who have been audited a great deal without any particular being. Well, they lose psychosomatics and various other things happen to them, but nothing very spectacular, and they're not clear. Let me ask you a pertinent question right there. Did you ever see a person who was authoritarianly inclined, who was anxious to have another human being have self-determinism? I'm afraid that's your answer about the tone scale levels. Get a person too low on the tone scale doing auditing, he doesn't want the other guy to have any self-determinism. He wants to own the other guy. The pre-clear is messed. And his process is toward ownership rather than toward cutting the guy loose. So naturally, he can run him and 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 run him. He'll find all the phenomena, which are recounted. He'll do wonderful things as far as an occasional psychosomatic. Every few hundred hours of auditing, the pre-clear is minus one more cough. Slow. Why? He isn't rehabilitating the one thing which is absolutely vital in a well human being. All right, time marched on. These are the shoe spike marks in my face and chest here, time marching on. And the first, having been freed from a lot of the turmoil and so on, the first really significant jump in Dianetic processing was validation processing. A lot of you here heard that lecture. Following it came messed processing and then validation messed processing. Vital steps. Those are educational steps rather than auditing steps by what we can now do. It's necessary to know them. And now comes self-determinism, effort processing. There was one filler in between there. There was effort processing, and then there's self-determinism, effort processing. We got our finger on the button now, and for God's sakes, don't push when you aren't looking, because the whole place will explode. You got the button. Little game we've been playing here for years. Now, it was wonderful that two things happened. One is that present technique compares philosophically, line for line, with the 1938 text on the physiological aspects and the philosophical postulates of problems connected with life and human behavior. Those postulates were not tied down to the physical universe. They existed as good guesses, extrapolated out from certain basic observations. Unproven, but there they were as guesses. Now Dianetic processing has gone in the whole cycle, 1938 on forward, clear on up, well, all the phenomena, and what we've got now is 1938 has suddenly got a bridge built to it. Those postulates were not very useful unless one could see that these postulates are invariably true, and here is the proof and the comparison to the real universe. So we come back in the circle, and we're there. I see that there's one little germ of possibility in the 1938 principles and postulates, which we have not fulfilled, but there's only one. And this merely postulates a spontaneous remission of all aberration on the single basis of suddenly assumed control through thought, and it's just put in there as a postulate that says this might happen, suddenly assumed control by thought of matter, energy, space, and time. It says this might be possible if you could straighten out all of the various force vectors which exist in a human being and channel these all in one direction. He might even be able, by will alone, to influence time. We have not fulfilled that, but it doesn't have to be fulfilled. There's nothing about this. As a matter of fact, poor old Excalibur back there in 1938, it's been much more neglected than it should have been. But with what reward to us? Tremendous quantity of data that has been accumulated, which would never have been looked at before. We know now that phenomena exist which, when we run into them, will not alarm us. We know their proper alignment and importance. We know how a preclear can be expected to behave and be in response to this phenomena. For instance, we know the literalness of language and engrams. We know the randomness of engrams. We know the various things which are contained in engrams. We know how we could lay them in. We have at least 25 ways to extrapolate a tone scale, and we all come out with the same tone scale. We know the basic interrelationships of these phenomena. Now we have this experience, and all the time we were doing this, we were about 100 times better than any psychotherapy that existed, but we weren't up to the par that we should be up to have a science of mind which contains push buttons A, B, and C. And you push A when you want so-and-so, and you push B and C when you want the guy to go nuts. Now, all this work, if it had not been done, would be lying up on the track of the future someplace, waiting to drop on the heads of poor, unsuspecting investigators who would not then be able to orient it or line it up, because it's an awful simple statement to say, it's only your self-determinism, boys and girls, which means a bit, that's all. And you smile politely and everybody says, yeah, well, we always knew that anyhow. Why don't we get on to some scientific data? Well, the difference is self-determinism is important, has been a blue piece with orange polka dots. It doesn't belong to the big white puzzle. It's been way up here someplace, and it was necessary for that datum to be evaluated, to have a bridge built between it and reality. I can tell you 800 reasons, I swear, why self-determinism is the button. Tell you several techniques by which it can be rehabilitated. Several techniques. And we can extrapolate this now through observed phenomena. We can figure it out, deduce it, induce it, anything you want to. We can prove it from the right to the left to the right, from top to bottom, and crosswise and diagonal. We could probably even prove it by the congressional record. Somebody's got to find a use for it sometime or other. In short, it's back in 1938, this datum hangs there rather unevaluated. 1951, it is there with an enormous amount of technology, an enormous amount of observed phenomena, and in addition to that, with the approximately 150 axioms of Dianetics, which are now complete. They're being typed and mimeographed. It will be issued as a little book to people who take the week's lectures next week. Those lectures, by the way, consist of going over the book, the little book of axioms, one by one, and all extrapolations and derivations of each axiom. And there's real beef in those axioms. For instance, one axiom, say, rather brief line, but it's provable, demonstrable, and demonstrably invariable. You could take this thing out into biochemistry or something of the sort, and it would start to do tricks. In other words, we've got side panel application for these things, and we've got a science. This can be written up in its final book form. It's going to look something like a geometry. And, of course, if you have something that looks like a geometry, you obviously have a science. We would never have had, if we hadn't been through the throes and agonies of the last couple of years, we'd never have had these axioms, extrapolations, enormous amounts of data. So I'm glad it happened. In addition to that, why, we'd still have hanging on to Dianetics a lot of undesirables. Of course, the fact is we could now probably cure them. If I catch anybody curing them, though, I'll bust his head in. I want him to suffer. Now, the second book, Science of Survival, oddly enough, is still valid. So is the first book valid, but it isn't sharply, the science of survival isn't sharply defined. Self-analysis is still quite valid, very valid, does what it's supposed to do. The odd part of it is here's all this technology. Enormous amount of technology that has passed through the hands of the foundation. Here it is in books. The funny part of it is that although I can stand here tonight and give you everything you need to know on the subject of auditing, to be a Dianeticist, any man, if he really wanted to know this subject and be able to do all that he could with it, would have to go through the same track again. In other words, he'll have to study book one. Have to study science of survival. He'll have to go over these various techniques. He'll have to demonstrate to himself all this phenomena. And in addition to that, when he gets all through, then he ties into the axioms. Now he'll study all of those, and he'll come out at the other end of the thing, and he will be able to tell you exactly what I'm telling you tonight. This is weird, but it's evidently a sort of a natural cycle built into the science. Here's all this phenomena. It's all equally true, but not equally evaluated. And you say, well, that datum isn't true, is it? And then you go down the rest of the 1,000 data that comprise this paper, and you'll find out that, yes, that datum that was remarked there was true. And the reason this guy remembered it is because it had a sympathy correspondence with his mind. And it sort of stood out. He had an instinct for its truth. And this instinctiveness of its truth started letting carry the data along. All right, there is the way to handle it. Because now, God help you, you're going to try to tell somebody about these things, and you're going to find people telling you immediately that all these things are known and all these things have been done. There's only one slight difference. If these cases continue to hold as they have held, you're going to have people walking in off the street with glasses, walking around the corner, and walking back onto the street without glasses. Going to have people coming in with arthritis and all the rest of it, and walking back on the street without it. Boom, 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 boom. slight difference, isn't it? But what is the essence of that difference? It's the fact that it's applicable to the real universe with an invariability. Now, that's its chief difference. So, we have a tremendous scope opening before us, and we've buttoned up a lot of data. We're going to get it nicely and solidly buttoned up next week in this series of lectures. Now, I want to make a statement on what is standard processing. No, this is standard procedure, self-determinism, mass processing. You don't have to put it down. You remember this. It's too easy. That isn't why you got the paper anyway. You got the pieces of paper so I can process you a little short time. I'm not going to send you all home clear, though. I'm mad this evening. Tired. Now, an axiom we're working on is that the mind makes observations in the present, compares it to the experience of the past, and postulates action for the future. That's in the first book. Again, not stressed with enough importance. Here's its evaluation. Psychotic is a person who is concerned solely with the past. A neurotic is a person who is struggling to combat the present. A healthy person is one who is thrusting efforts into the future. What's the definition of sanity? Just simply that. It's ability to postulate futures. What's the definition of neurosis? Neurosis is a concern with the problems of the present, so that you could have a temporary or continual neurosis. Psychotic, concern only with the problems of the past. A tone scale is a graduated scale of futures. You'll look at, in book one, the first drawing of the tone scale shows time plotted against future, survival plotted against future, and it shows as you rise up the tone scale, there's more and more future postulated. The statement didn't quite have the right emphasis on it. It's there, but it didn't have quite the right emphasis. The right emphasis simply says that a person's ability to postulate the future points up his position on the tone scale. And his position on the tone scale demonstrates to you where he's going to occupy the time track. If he's below 2-0, he's in the past. If he's around 2-0, he's in the present. And if he's above 2-0, he's postulating futures. That simple? All right. We take a psychotic. We want to get him into an neurotic. We don't have to get him into a neurotic state, but most of them go in a neurotic state. And the first step of standard procedure, October 1st, 1951, is the estimation of where the main effort of this individual is, past, present, or future. This immediately gives you diagnosis, psychotic, neurotic, or sane. They're not absolute terms. You see the gradient scale. Number two, three, four, and five, the remaining steps, concern themselves with how you process at what level on the tone scale, your lower levels of inaccessibility and so forth. So these steps are steps that are used on the tone scale on up. So you get the person occupying the psychotic band, and all you do is try to generate enough ARC around him to snap him into a recognition of the present. That's all you can do for him. One of the ways of establishing communication is physical communication. Patting him on the arm, rubbing his shoulders, something of this sort. Although this is just one method of communication and is very far from uniformly workable with psychotics. I'm just pointing it up that communication is just plain perception. If you can get the guy to see you, you're in communication with him. Now, ARC then, to get him up into present. Ross was telling me, he said he was processing psychotics all right with running engrams out of them. He was sort of growling at me one day because I said that you shouldn't run engrams in psychotics. And right in the middle of trying to tell me this, he interrupts himself. And then he says, well, I use lots of ARC. Of course, he's processing a neurotic. The guy might be psychotic the moment he Ross shoved off, but I mean, while Ross is there, the fellow has an ARC level communication, so he's just boosted the case up. That is the best example I can think of step one, low-level cases. This applies to network processing or anything else. It's about all you can do with a guy as far as we know at the present moment. Now, you bring him up to that. There's no sense in trying to go in on the structural side exclusively with a psycho. Now, you start working down here, and that's the trouble with him, is the environment has been monitoring this board instead of I, see? The environment monitors the board. And if you give him authoritarian or structural processing exclusively, you're just monitoring the same boy. What you're trying to rehabilitate is this, not this. All right? Now, a person who has a present time concern, neurosis, something like that, all you do is give him validation mess processing. This is clearing up what he observes. It's evaluating the physical universe around him. Puts language in its proper place. It gives him on the validation side of the ledger some concept of motion, something of the sort. In other words, you can put him in contact with his present. You don't have to do very much of this when you get him up to that point, because all you're trying to do, and all you're trying to do when you go in any case, is just trying to groom it up for some self-determinism effort processing. Boom. Now, the next step is you use validation effort processing. This consists of discovering moments when the pre-clear is successfully approaching goals, when he is successfully exerting an effort, when his self-determined effort is winning. These are moments you want to find when his self-determined effort is winning. You get the idea. Now, the next level is you just start knocking out the N-theta efforts. Knocked out on a switchboard, not a somatic level. Wherever you can, switchboard, not a somatic level. Now, that is the last step on the thing, and you just continue that through till you have a theta mass clear. Might take you hours and hours and hours, 25 hours, something like that. You think I'm kidding? Your biggest problem is trying to get somebody up so that you at least worry about present time. In other words, to break with ARC, a psychosis, into the middle of the band. And you want to break him into 2-0 and get him into a position where he can use validation mess, then use a little mess processing, then go on up the line. Then some validation effort, and then N-theta effort processing. You just hit at moments when he's unsuccessful, and you start knocking these things out, and you get the efforts for them. It's rather simple. Not very hard on the auditor. This is standard procedure as of this moment. And a very simple standard procedure it is. Don't want to catch anybody aberrated around here next Monday night. Aren't you tired of it? All right, now you all got your pencils and papers. I want you to make a list. This is just very personal unto you. I want you to make a list of the five things, number the list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, of the five things you think ought to be corrected about yourself. I don't care what they are. Five things you think ought to be corrected about yourself. Now, nobody else is going to see this list. It's not going to be handed in to anybody. And if you hide it real careful with your hand, your next door neighbor is not going to read it. So be very frank about what you put down there on the five things you find wrong with yourself that you would like to correct. Now, this is very pertinent to it. It might not seem so for the moment. Do you remember what I've told you about depth of unconsciousness in engrams? Have I ever drawn these graphs for you? Here is an engram. Here is this line here is a level of consciousness, a complete awareness level. And here's a blow engram pattern. Single blow engram pattern. Impulse into the motor structure, a moment of swamping of eye, bong. Here is your drug or bacteria unconsciousness pattern. Gradual lessening of consciousness, more or less so, back up. Here, of course, would be an operation. Those are the only two patterns, and here'd be an operation. That's where they're cutting the fellow's prefrontal lobes out so they'll be sane. That'd be a combination of the two. Now, this is plotted against time. Depth of unconsciousness plotted against time. Here is the first millisecond of the blow, and then here are the succeeding minutes. Here, it had run by minutes, so on. Now, you can see that these two patterns are approximately the same. There is a depth of unconsciousness here. Here's the deepest point of unconsciousness in this one. Here's the deepest point of unconsciousness in this one. It's where it occurs with regard to time that's important, isn't it? Otherwise, they're the same pattern. This bang, and this one swoops out. But there is a reduction from optimum, or reduction from present time awareness, and then a drop off, and then a return to consciousness, whatever pattern. So we can use this one as the illustration. What is the emotional reaction here? What is the emotional reaction here? What is it here? How does a person feel about time? Here. Here. There's your whole tone scale in operation. Out here someplace, the person's cheerful, then he's aware of the fact that it has to be done. Here sets up a concern or anxiety because of some past experience. Then he starts into this, and he's being very brave, and he is determining that he's going to take it on an operation there. His self-determinism, get that? He's self-determined here that he needs it. Then he's self-determined that he's going to take it. Now it's happening, and now all of a sudden his self-determinism starts to fold up. He wants to get out of there. Boom. So he's come down to fear, and definitely into the fleeing category. Here he's starting down toward a little bit deeper level, and here he reaches apathy, and here he goes on up the tone scale again. So the tone scale and the depth of unconsciousness form the same pattern. Now, pain is loss. Pain is always loss. It's a signal, loss. Loss causes it. Person burns his finger. What is he trying to do with his hand the moment he burns the finger? It's not that pain has a purpose in the scale of things. This is highly mechanistic. What does he try to do with his hand? He pulls it away from the hot object. Very simple reaction. Why does he pull it away from the hot object? To save the loss of more cells. Keep from losing more cells. What's a person doing an appendectomy? He tries to keep from losing the cells. That's what he does in any pain. He tries to keep from losing these things. Every engram is mechanistically then has a holder in it, doesn't it? Self-determinism in the blurred moments of randomity of effort, self-determinism itself is saying, hold on. But we haven't got a clear picture of what we're holding on to. We hold on to the cells, also the engram. Why do people get stuck in them? They're holding on to them. They don't want to have that loss. So they hold on to this moment, and here's your reaction at the moment. On a blow, something like that, you have a resistance of the force. Why do you have a resistance of the force? This resistance of the force still contains, along here someplace, trying to hold on to a force. Trying to hold on to a force, trying to do something about a force. So something shows up in the environment, and the person regenerates his holding on to what he would lose because of pain. So the engram comes into re-stimulation. There it is in present time. He has to make an effort to hold on to what he is losing. We don't care whether that effort is in his fingertips, because it's not. Here's a conversion center. And we can snip this one off at the conversion center, not his fingertips. The pain is not important, but the self-determined effort with regard to this engram is important. Self-determinism with regard to the engram is important. Here, the guy's in apathy. Somewhere along the line here, he goes into grief of loss. Then he goes into apathy. And then he just hopes they won't kill all of him. All of this pain, devil with whether the pain's run out, because it's not stored in the cells. It's on a conversion level here. very adequately on this conversion level. And he's making an effort, a self-determined effort to do something. You don't care whether he's making a determined effort to push somebody away or pull somebody closer, whatever is self-determinism. What is the effort? That's what's important. Now, his self-determinism then, no matter his level of awareness, is still flowing through this whole thing. But it evidently doesn't have to be undone at the level of physical pain. The physical pain is, after all, a signal system, and sure, there's a theta facsimile of all that physical pain. Yes, sir. The question is solely whether or not the individual self-determines himself into wanting it, holding it. And the area of action and effort is here, not here. Now, you can do effort processing in the long, hard way by getting up all of the fingertip effort. But what's the converter unit? It's up here. Up here. Down the spine and up in here. That's the effort you want. It's the only effort you want. That's the area which you as an auditor establish through his own experience for the pre-clear. Now, the way you establish that it's there is you get a moment when he's proceeding toward his goals on a validation level. What is his effort to enjoy himself? Now, I ask all of you, can you pick up a moment there when you're enjoying yourself and going toward a goal? And can you locate this effort up here? The effort of going toward a goal. All right, let's be very specific. Any of you that like to eat, eating at this stage of Dianetics is still necessary. Any of you that like to eat, something like that, how about the effort of sitting down to the table to pull up the steak? How about the effort of sitting down at the table? You can undoubtedly get some semblance of the effort of sitting down in a chair. Physically sitting down in a chair to a table, you can get some semblance of this. Well, that's the hard way. Let's get the effort here to sit down in a chair. You see, all we want is the moment that you self-determined yourself into sitting down in a chair. That's the signal we want. And all we want is the instant that you decided to sit down in the chair. All right. Now, what is the effort to stand up? Just that, just the effort to stand up. And you can check it over right here in present time. It's just simply a matter of flexing forward and getting up. That's all. Now, you can locate where it would be located in these muscles. Here, here, so on. You're trying to locate it out at the other end of the telegraph line. Let's get it at the home center of the telegraph line. Now, what's the effort here at the moment you decide that you're going to stand up? What's the effort? And the way you can get this is getting the muscular action of standing up, and then see if we can get a moment when maybe you would decide to stand up. How would it feel? How would it feel here to stand up? To decide to stand up. How would it feel to decide to stand up? All right, what is the muscular effort of taking a breath? A deep breath. What's the muscular effort of taking a deep breath? Go ahead and take one. What's the muscular effort of taking a deep breath? Now, what's the self-determinism effort that converts this muscular effort to take a deep breath? It's very easy to find, you see. You just have to locate a moment when you decided to take a deep breath. Regardless of who suggested taking a deep breath to you, the devil with whether people suggest anything or not, evidently they can't do anything to you. I mean, nobody can do anything to you. You're built out of cast iron. We thought all the time you're built out of putty. Well, anyhow. Now, what is the effort of sitting down in a car, the physical effort of sitting down in a car? Which door do you get into and how do you get behind the wheel of a car? Now, can we find a moment of the effort of opening the door of a car when you determined that you were going to get into a car? Can you locate a moment when you made up your mind you're going to get into a car? What's the effort of dictating that action to yourself? Now, you started to write down a trait, something of the sort, as number one there. How did it feel the moment you decided to write that down? Well, how did it feel writing it down? How does it just generally feel to hold pencil? Now, that's how it feels down here. Here, here, here. What's the converter sensation up here? To suddenly determine to hold a pencil. What's the converter sensation? See what I'm doing for you? I'm just giving you the area of awareness of conversion. With some of you, it might take quite a little while with an auditor working. I see from looks on your faces, quite a few of you got it right then now. Now, what would be the effort of opening a door? What's the physical effort of opening a door? Now, what's the effort of self-determinism to open a door? Now, what's the effort of holding something? The effort of something in your hand. What's the effort of something in your hand, holding something? No fair any boil-offs back there. That's oddly enough something we don't have to worry about with this type of processing. Boil-off, track running, nothing. Lord, thank God we know all those things are there now. Otherwise, with effort processing, we just never have learned them. All right. What's the effort of holding something in your hand? Now, what is the effort here of lifting something? The effort here of deciding to lift something. Now, what is the effort of trying to push somebody away from you? What's the physical body effort of trying to push somebody away? What's the physical body effort of somebody pushing against you? Boil off. It's not fair. What's this effort, somebody pushing against you? Now, can you locate the feeling of effort of you pushing them away? Just physical effort of you pushing somebody away. Not getting this, it's because I'm giving it to you very, very lightly. I see most of you are. You see, there's the tough way to go about it is to teach a guy effort by he sees his limbs in the positions of holders and so forth, and you just teach him how that effort feels and what somatics it turns on. You shift his attention around from hand to feet, and all of a sudden the guy will suddenly become concerned with that, and then all you do is pick it up and say, how does it feel here? That's a very fast way of doing it, but just a little bit dangerous. Unless an auditor's sitting there. All right. The effort of pushing somebody away. Now, how does the effort of pushing somebody away feel here?